This is the Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast with Nick Cavins.
This episode is brought to you by Prize Picks, the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Prize Picks. Again, the code is CLNS. Also brought to you by Factor Meals, where every fresh, never frozen meal is chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. Head to factormeals.com/Bedard50. Use code again, Bedard50, to get 50% off. All right, Greg, before we get into the breaking news from earlier today regarding Kyle Duggar, let's first point out something that I know you're very proud of, the Channel Market Survey. The results came out in the last 24 hours, and big boy, we're number one when it comes to sports podcasts around this area, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I was pretty surprised. I mean, you know, look, we've been steadily climbing since these came out. You know, I got to give you a ton of credit. You know, we started this thing from nothing just because we wanted to work together. And I've been a fan of yours from afar for a long time. And, you know, let's see, I think we've done this in multiple states
oh, yeah.
With you. Okay. Different jobs, certainly in transition. I want to give you a big shout out because I know you've come back home. You've risked a lot. Trust me when I know how tough it can be. But I've always valued having your voice on here and your opinion, which I respect. So, yeah, I just wanted to thank you, and of course thank our listeners. I mean, you know, I think the biggest thing is that, you know, we just try to speak the truth here and we don't have an agenda, and I guess it's going over well.
I guess so. And look, kind words for me, but let's be honest. It's the Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast, and the people show up in droves because Greg Bedard's the name on the headline board there. And also let me point out that Greg, he moved up two spots to the number two favorite local sports writer as well. So Bedard business is going very, very well. People clinging to Greg Bedard coverage. And I think it does really speak to Boston Sports Journal. And I'll just say this quick note. Thanks to the listeners, of course, the viewers as well, whether you watch on YouTube or you listen to Apple Pods, however you get the podcast, we appreciate every single one of you. And I will say that, you know, Greg also took a chance and a risk by starting his own website and starting his own business venture. And I think it says an awful lot that, you know, you get these kinds of votes that pop up and these results. And I think it says a lot about the program that you've run over there, the website and what you do. So congratulations on that as well, my friend.
Thanks, Nick. You know, one thing I just wanted to say on that real quick, and hopefully I don't become emotional like Jason Kelce or anything like that, but just to sort of share to the listeners, you know, a little inside ball game stuff. About this time last year, after sort of the Matt Patricia year with the Patriots, I was at a pretty low point in terms of I thought I did a really good job start to finish that year, telling people the truth about the Patriots, from even, you know, before they got started in May to what was going on with the offense and how things were going to go and, you know, picking their record correctly and things like that. And I thought I hit on just about everything. Now, I'm never going to be perfect. I'm never going to get every evaluation right. And at the end of the season, I was frustrated. I didn't know if people were listening. I didn't know if people cared. I didn't know if people wanted to hear the truth about their team. And so for this to come out just sort of reinforces, and of course I know our listeners, the readers at BSJ, you know, our core people, they understand it, and that's what they come there for. But it just really reinforced that, yes, a lot of people, they want the truth about their teams. And I think that's why they come here. They go to BSJ, and that's what we try to give them each time out.
Yeah, so I had many conversations with Greg from across the country last summer as he was kind of going through things, thinking things, you know, through and the idea of what he should do, what he was going to do, and interesting conversations that we both had. and we have with each other, frankly, going through some personal stuff as well. So anyway, that's enough about us. But yes, yeah. Greg did have those conversations, and what he says is true. He was wondering where his place was and what he was going to do or not do, and I think he made the right decision. All right, speaking of free agency, which Greg might have been if he decided to go a different route last summer, there's your corny big market transition, everybody. And speaking of transitions, this guy's on fire. Kyle Duggar. Kyle Duggar ends up getting the transition tag, Greg, from the Patriots. Now, let me first lay the groundwork quickly and concisely for everybody trying to figure out what the transition tag is. And then, Greg, I'll ask for your thoughts. So transition tag, it's less money than a franchise tag. It's $13.8 million versus $17 million. Duggar's allowed to talk to other teams during this time. The Patriots, if Duggar gets an offer, they can match that offer. They can say, okay, well, we want to keep you. We're matching it, and you're a Patriot. If Duggar walks, the Patriots do not get any compensation. Now, if an offer sheet is not signed with another team by like late July, then Duggar can only negotiate with the Patriots. So this is not one of those, you know, okie dokes, and then all of a sudden in August, he can change his mind and go to another team. There is a deadline with him getting an offer sheet and signing said offer sheet. Another part of this, Greg, is that Duggar will not be eligible as a compensatory pick free agent next year. You know, the formula, if you have your guy, he sign, he walks into free agency. If he signs a big deal with another team, you get a comp pick. This transition tag wipes that formula out. Unless the Patriots rescind the tag, if they rescind it, then that compensatory formula stands. And of course, the transition tag, I know we'll get into this. People are wondering, can you franchise Mike Owenu? You can't. Once a transition tag is used, you cannot use another tag. That's part of the new CBA and collective bargaining agreement between the union and the league. All right, so I laid all that out for you. Greg, just your initial thoughts when you saw this pop up just about a couple of hours ago.
Well, let's just stick with Kyle Duggar for now and you know, sort of my read of this. I the transition tag isn't used very much. I think it's been used, you know, five times in the last like 20 years or something like that. And basically when you want it, when you use the transition tag as opposed to the franchise tag, really what this is saying is the two sides are pretty far apart on their value. And there was a report from Tony Pauline. I'm not sure where he's writing now, but he's well-respected. He talks to a lot of people. He said that there was an offer on the table for Kyle Duggar for $13 million, a multi-year extension at $13 million. This tag is a little bit above that. So that's basically telling me that Kyle Duggar thinks he's worth more, that he was holding out for more. The Patriots disagree, and basically what they are saying is, okay, go ahead, go find that offer, and we'll match it. If you're right, we will match it, and you'll be back here. Where this works for the Patriots and why I don't mind it for the Patriots as opposed to other times, and when you get into other tags like restricted free agent tags and what levels and stuff like that, that's sort of besides the point. But why I don't mind it in this circumstance for the Patriots is they have $100 million in cap space. So where you get into an issue with the transition tag is if you're tight up against the cap. You use the transition tag. The other teams know this, or they know you're having cap trouble. So either they wait really late in the process to sign an offer sheet when maybe you've used up your cap space and you can't match it, or they construct it in such a way where it would wreck your cap if, and the team just couldn't do it. They couldn't, they knew that the player's former team couldn't match the offer. The Patriots have, they are not in danger of any of that with how much cap space they have relative to the rest of the league. And so really this is just a placeholder. It's almost like an arbitrator in terms of between Duggar and the Patriots. I also like it as opposed to just saying, hey, Kyle, go get the offer. We'll match it. We'll, you know, make up the tax difference, whatever. If they said that, why I like the transition tag better is, you know, at the end of the day, Kyle might want to say, well, I want to go play in Miami or I want to play in California. I don't want to play in New England anymore. So the Patriots might be intent on matching an offer. But Kyle might be like, no, I want to go play for this coach. I want to go play in this city. Like, keep your offer. This is where I want to go. This is where I want to live. With the transition tag, the Patriots have the right to match that. So they determine really whether Kyle Duggar's back here next year or not. And at the same time, they both find common sense agreement on how much he is worth.
Yeah, when you look around, I know Jonathan Jones from CBS tweeted this a little bit earlier. It is a depressed safety market, and there have been three or four safeties just today that were released. Now, I'm not telling you that Kyle Duggar is not worth more than Jamal Adams. He obviously is at this point in their career, but there's going to be safeties out there that are going to be available for much cheaper than Kyle Duggar. And so you also, as Greg has pointed out on this podcast several times before, there are things that Duggar does very well. There are things that he's not so great at. He's not the best cover safety. He's more of an in-the-box, aggressive, downhill kind of guy. So now you need a specific fit for Duggar to go along with that depressed market. And what Elliott Wolf and company are saying is, hey, we don't think another team out there is going to blow you away. Yeah, they might offer you $14 million a year, but we'll bump it up $200,000 from the transition tag, and we'll get that long-term deal done and keep you here in New England, Kyle. And Kyle, look, he has the right. If he believes that he can get $16 million, $17 million, which is pretty much the top of the safety market, you're looking at about $16 million. If he thinks he can get that, well, this is his opportunity. But I think the Patriots are doing some smart business here, Greg, and allowing him to go out there, talk to teams. I think it also shows that, hey, we value you. As you said, they're not letting him walk out there just free. They're saying, no, we value you. We're going to put this tag on you because we really want you here, Kyle. And if you don't find a deal that's unbelievable, and even if you do, maybe we match. But we want to tell you that we want you here. And this is a way to do that when you still disagree about the price regarding the player. From Duggar's standpoint, Greg, I think another question is, you know, do you think he's motivated? Let's say he goes out there, because some people would say, well, he can just sign the tag, stay here for a year, and then hit free agency. But do you think it's a little bit different with Duggar because you have mentioned his age in the past?
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is unique. And I was afraid that – not afraid, but I suspected that Kyle, because he's going to be 28 this year, and, you know, really this is going to be his only chance at a big contract. And I know if I was in his shoes, I would go to market and get as much as I can because, you know, say he gets a contract, he's likely playing 3 years. Now he's into his 30s. And who's going to sign him to another big money contract in his 30s the way he plays? I didn't think that was the case. So I always figured Kyle would probably reach for the stars. So I definitely think that's a factor. And I will say, Nick, the other thing that this tells me, and now we'll bring Michael Wenu into this a little bit, is normally when you have multiple guys that you're thinking about tagging, and obviously Awenu and Duggar were the likely candidates for the Patriots. We've discussed it and debated it before. Normally what happens is you tag the guy who you're furthest apart on as far as value. So I am somewhat encouraged, I think, a little, and I could be completely off on this, but that they are closer with Michael Wenu to coming to an agreement on a long-term extension that wouldn't be signed until the new league year when free agency starts. And they decided to figure out the value for Duggar and sort of put a placeholder on him. I'm hoping that's the way it ends up, because I still think, and I'm, you know, we'll see the way it plays out. I still believe that Michael Wenu should be more of a priority for this team, where they are offensively, how much less money they're spending on offense. It's like $58 million compared to 90 something on defense. So I think that Michael Wenu getting another really good offensive lineman with this rebuild is more of a priority. And I'm hoping, my instinct is to tell me that they're close on Michael Wenu, who's dealing with some agent stuff. That might be slowing the process, but they're close on Mike and they just want to put a placeholder on Duggar. And to me, that's the best of both worlds for the Patriots.
Yeah, because that's the initial reaction, right? I think a lot of people have that reaction of, wait a minute, if you're going to tag one of these guys, why is it Duggar and not Owenu? And it might lead you to believe, like you're saying, Greg, that they have a deal almost done, that they're very confident they're going to be able to bring in Owenu. Because when you look at this, I was just reading the other day, you know, the guard market is supposed to be, you know, pretty pricey this offseason. A lot of people expect the guard, you know, position to cost $15, $16, $17 million per year. And obviously, Big Mike is one of those guys near the top of the board. So you would think from a supply and demand standpoint, the fact that guard is more of a premium, you would think that Wolf would put a tag on Owenu and let Duggar walk. But because he did the opposite, you do wonder if it means that they're closer with Owenu than they are with Duggar. Or the Patriots are just not thrilled with, you know, spending $21 million on the franchise tag with Mike or the transition tag with Mike. So we'll see how it all works out. We'll talk about offensive line stuff a little bit later as well, because there are some rumors about who the Patriots might be going after. I just want to circle back to the safety stuff for a second, because we do have some news with the safety market. And as I just mentioned, it's going to be a depressed market because of supply and demand. There's going to be a lot of guys out there. And the Giants just decided to not tag Xavier McKinney. So there's another safety that is on the market that is available. So if you see more safeties available, it's not good news for Kyle Duggar. All right, we've got a lot of... Yeah,
And I just want to say, Xavier McKinney, who is more of a free safety, and I know there's some reports that the Patriots might be looking to add a premium piece on defense. McKinney or free safety is where I would be looking, but also I think they'll also look at edge, especially if Matthew Judon, who wants a new contract, is not in their future.
Yeah, I wonder if they're eyeing Daniil Hunter. All right, before we move forward with more, a lot of free agency notes out there. Before we get to that, Greg wants to tell you about our friends at Prize Picks.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Testing my skills on Prize Picks this season is the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few taps. This week on Prize Pick, I'm selecting Stephen Curry for more than 29 points, Caitlin Clark for more than 30 points. Yeah, you can cross streams, cross sports, all that stuff. LeBron James, more than 7 assists. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Make sure you use promo code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Yeah, our friends at Prize Picks, very, very easy app to use. People love it. More or less at Prize Picks. As we told you, the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. All right, we got more free agency notes, Greg. A lot of stuff happening throughout the league today because it is the deadline for these tags to be used. Let's start with wide receiver. So Mike Evans agrees to a 2-year contract extension with the Bucs. He's off the market. Michael Pittman gets the non-exclusive franchise tag. If people are wondering, that means that, yes, you can negotiate with Michael Pittman if you're the Patriots, but you'd have to give up, I think it's what, 2 first-round picks in return for Pittman. I don't see that happening. So just kind of your thoughts on the domino effect at wide receiver, and it certainly looks like Calvin Ridley might be the guy that's best available by the time we get to next week, Greg.
Yeah, I just think that he's probably going to be the top guy available, and he's going to get overpaid by somebody. And I do not expect Elliott Wolf and the Patriots to overpay for players. I do think they'll pay, but you know, getting crazy on Calvin Ridley, I don't know about that. That's more for other teams to do. One thing I wanted to point out, because you also have like T. Higgins, you know, is getting tagged by the Bengals. Another wide receiver. I did want to point one thing out for people, and this is possible, and it's very possible with T. Higgins and also L'Jarius Sneed, the Chiefs cornerback, is that, yes, the compensation is whatever it is, 2 first-round picks or what have you, depending on the tag, but nothing precludes the teams from working out a deal. So basically, they would just trade the player. You can agree to a trade that's lesser than the tag. It's very similar to how the Patriots got Wes Welker from the Dolphins. I think Wes was a restricted free agent at the time. The Patriots and the Dolphins came to an agreement on compensation, and then the Patriots signed Wes Welker to a new contract once he got there. So don't be afraid of the compensation, because you don't need to sign a contract offer. Now, if you really want the player and the other team wants to retain him, then, yeah, you're going to have to give that up. But that rarely happens. Most of the time, the teams settle on, say, like one first-round pick, and then you got to pay the player. But you can craft a deal like that.
Great point. All right, let's get to the tight end market. So Dalton Schultz, who was somebody who's been linked with the Patriots in some reports over the last few days, he's going to stay in Houston. 3 years, $36 million, of course. This could set the market for Hunter Henry, maybe a little less than Dalton Schultz, maybe the same as Dalton Schultz. But now the Patriots, Greg, they're looking at Henry, who reportedly they are far apart talking to him about contract extension. Noah Fant is also out there. Gerald Everett is also out there. Where do you think this leads New England as far as the tight end position goes?
Yeah, I think they would want Hunter Henry back. What was the Schultz? How much did he get?
3 years, 36.
So that's, is that?
It's right about the franchise tag, I think, right? Franchise tag went up a little bit.
And that's where, you know, Hunter Henry got it, you know, 3 years ago from the Patriots. Him and Jonnu Smith both got like $12 million per year from the Patriots. You would think Hunter would be a little bit below that. I could see why he's drawn a hard line and maybe wants to go to market. Remember how the Patriots ended up with both Jonnu Smith. Remember, they signed Jonnu Smith first, and then sort of Hunter Henry happened at the same level a day or two after that. And what really happened was Hunter Henry, I think, turned down the Patriots offer, went to look for bigger money, wasn't out there, then came back to the Patriots and just said, is that offer still on the table? And then Bill thought about it and was like, two tight ends at that number? Okay, yeah, let's do it. So Hunter is definitely, you know, one of these guys who, and there's nothing wrong with this. It's not a criticism. You know, I think he's looking for the best deal possible. And to me, I think at the end of the day, you know, getting Pharaoh Brown and Hunter Henry back, I think would be the best thing for the Patriots. Then you can draft one and develop a guy, sort of like what we wanted them to do last year. But of course, we all know what happened with all that stuff, tackle and tight end. And so I could see Hunter Henry being back here. But again, they're going to let him go to market and determine his value.
All right, more tag news. Josh Allen just tagged by the Jaguars. He was one of the top edge guys defensively there in free agency, or was expected to be or hoped to be. He's off the market. He's been tagged. Brian Burns also tagged by Carolina, so both edges get tagged. Greg, I mentioned this name a little bit earlier. I found it interesting that Doug Kye and Andrew Callahan at the Herald, they've reported that the Patriots are going to target at least one elite defender who would start immediately for Jerod Mayo. Now, when I think elite, I think elite. A lot of people say, oh, that guy's elite, but he's like eighth or ninth as far as rankings at the position. Elite means cream of the crop, baby. We're talking top 10, top 15 free agent here. And I do wonder if edge is one of those places. We talked about, you know, Matthew Judon. Maybe it's time to move on from him because of his contract. We know he's going to want to get paid. Danielle Hunter is a name I keep going back to. He's somebody who has been incredibly productive, more than 70 pressures last year for Minnesota. He's out on the market. What do you think about Kide and Callahan's report about, hey, maybe the Patriots do go defense and try to get one of those elite names available?
Yeah, I think it's, in my opinion, it's a case of, I think it's swapping out one for another, sort of what we talked about earlier. I think that Judon, we all know what the contract issues were last year, and a sort of hold in camp, and then they moved money from 2024 into 2023 to get him done, and now he's not set to make much, and you know, no guaranteed money, stuff like that, and a player as accomplished as Judon, and doesn't like that, and you know, he's going to want a new contract or a new situation, and I could see the Patriots saying like, okay, you know, go do your thing. And then swapping, you know, Hunter in for him would make a lot of sense. I do think that I think that edge and free safety will be two spots on defense where they're looking to make an impact. You know, Josh Uche probably gone. If Judon's gone, they don't have anything on the edge, so they better have a plan at edge.
I know some people were getting excited about Christian Wilkins, who's not going to sign with the Dolphins.
Yeah.
But the question about Wilkins and really any interior defensive lineman that's out there is you've got Barmore. And if you're going to sign Barmore to a big fat contract extension, how much money are you willing to pour into the interior defensive line? Are you going to give Barmore this big fat extension plus give Christian Wilkins a top of the market deal? And now you're paying what, $35, $40 million average annual value at inside, you know, defensive line. I can't imagine that's going to be the case. So I would look at edge. I would look at safety. And, you know, it depends on, again, the elite moniker, but corner could be an option too. You can move Jonathan Jones
yep.
out of the outside. So I don't think it'd be crazy to think that cornerback could be a target, including old friend Stephon Gilmore. Maybe he's open to coming back on a one-year deal until you can kind of reshape that thing with Christian Gonzalez. Let's get back to the offense.
I will say, just real quick, totally agree on Hunter. Bryce Huff from the Jets is a guy who I think is going to get paid. He's sort of flying under the radar, but, you know, really good. And so, you know, and I think free safety, when you look at it, and we don't know what their plans are with Marte Mapu, as we talked about before, and how they view him. But to me, there's no question that free safety was a weakness in this unit. And if I'm Jerod Mayo, that's something that I'm looking to upgrade.
Yeah, and some would bring up Hassan Reddick. But, of course, if you're gonna go out and get him, that's going to cost you a pick or two because that would be via trade. So, but he is another guy that's been reportedly available, even though he says he wants to stay. All right, let's get back to the offensive line quickly. We were talking about Onwenu a little bit earlier. There have been reports, Greg, that the Patriots are targeting Tyron Smith, of course, from Dallas. We thought that Smith was going to stay in Dallas. Now it looks like he's unlikely to stay in Dallas. Might lead you to believe that during the combine, his agent heard something that he might be able to get more money than Dallas was willing to offer. Would you like that idea, the Patriots going out and getting Smith on a short-term, 1 or 2 year deal and putting him at left tackle?
Yes. And by the way, I forgot to add, like, first of all, nobody loves Christian Wilkins more than I do. I have loved watching his film over the years for the Dolphins, but I agree. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense for this team unless you're going to move like Devon Godshaw or something like that, even though they play slightly different positions. As far as Tyron Smith, when he's on the field, he's still elite. The problem with him is he's hurt all the time. So, yes, in a vacuum, if he's healthy – yes, I would definitely look into that, and I think that would be appealing, at least as a placeholder. Maybe you get a developmental guy. You're going to have another plan if he goes down, because he often goes down, and I don't even know how much he practices and things like that. You know, one thing, Nick, I want to caution people on, and we're going to hear this, and we've already heard it, and we're going to hear it a ton more. to me, it's hard to discern these reports, like how much interest there is. Because, you know, what's one reporter is, you know, the interest is another reporter's due diligence and that sort of thing. So, you know, I just caution people, like, just because the Patriots, they might be, quote unquote, linked to somebody. Look, the Patriots are going to, anybody who's available, including Tyron Smith, they are going to check in on. They are going to see what the, not only for their own interest, but possibly just gauging the market, maybe even negotiations with other players and things like that. Basically, anybody that is available, and this goes for free agents, this goes for trade. The Patriots are, someone from the Patriots is going to call that team, is going to call that agent and find out what's going on. Hey, keep us in mind. Let us know what you're doing. Does that mean that they're interested, that they're really targeting this person? No. So, you know, just people should just be careful about, you know, linking too much. A lot of this is just due diligence and doing their job and making sure they know the market and not actual interest. And sometimes that's tough to discern.
Yeah. And I'll just go back to your points on Smith and his health. you have to have a backup plan, as you said. Is Calvin Anderson back in football? How is he health-wise? Do you think he has something left that he was not able to show last year because of the illness he had? Is he your swing tackle? Jermaine Illuminor is a name that I keep bringing up. Is he great? No, he's not, but he's been pretty good for the Raiders the last couple of years. He could be a swing tackle. He could be some depth insurance if you go out there and you get Smith. Smith played 14 games last year. He was a second-team All-Pro, and you know, a lot of people in Dallas would tell you it's because they changed his practice schedule, i.e. he did not take a lot of contact during the week. They preserved his body. So maybe that gets him somewhere. Before I give you another offensive line name, Greg, I could be wrong, but I think you like this guy, and I don't know if it's going to matter at all or not, but interestingly enough, it looks like the Dolphins have released their starting linebacker, Jerome Baker. Is that somebody who you take a look at?
I would need to do more of a deep dive. I love Baker's athletic ability, but man, he is snookered a lot on play action, over aggressive. I mean, is that the type of guy that Gerard Mayo looks at and says, I can coach this guy up? Possibly. To me, I thought at least in the scheme, the recent scheme for the Dolphins, I thought he was more of a liability than anything, but certainly a fascinating prospect if you think there's another level you can coach him to.
Another name that's been mentioned about this O-line, possibly Patriots looking at, targeting, talking to, whatever the case may be, Jonah Williams. He is somebody supposedly on the radar of the Patriots. I don't know if this is in case you don't get Smith. Sounded like the report that I read, I think it was in Mass Live with Karen and Chris Mason and Mark Daniels. That report certainly made it sound like it was Smith first and then Williams if they couldn't get Smith. But your thoughts on Jonah Williams as an option?
Yeah, I mean, that's a name that I've been talking about for a while that, you know, if I was going to draw it up, Jonah Williams would be that tackle that I can get, and I'm still flexible because he's played both sides of the line.
Yep.
You could go, okay, we're going to lock up Jonah Williams, so we know we have a starting tackle. And it could be he can start at left tackle. He did that for many years and was a good, solid player. He's better in pass pro than he is run blocking. And say you end up at the end of the day trading down and taking one of the top tackles in the draft or what have you, the secondary, and the kid pops. Well, and he could play left tackle. You know, let's just use Joe Alt as an example. Say you trade down a few spots in the draft at a quarterback and you draft the best left tackle. If Joe Alt hits and he's the left tackle, all of a sudden Jonah Williams is your right tackle, and now you're cooking with gas. So Jonah Williams is a guy that I would have a lot of interest in. I wouldn't mind, Nick, I don't know how you feel about this, I wouldn't mind kicking the tire on Mekhi Becton. I know he's had a lot of issues. You know, it all depends on the contract and stuff. But, man, there's no question. His early rookie tape was unbelievable. And, you know, sometimes guys just go through stretches in their career, especially when they're young, when they go through injuries and then all of a sudden they come out of that. Is he coachable? You know, a lot of it's going to depend on what the Patriots, what Scott Peters, the offensive line coach, what Kugler, the assistant offensive line coach, what they thought about him coming out in the draft. There's no question the talent is the upside is unbelievable. And there's one other name that I wanted people to, and I don't even know if it's on this list where I'm looking, and I keep scrolling through Pro Football Talk. I am going to try to find it. It is the Vikings have a backup offensive lineman that I heard things about when the Patriots traded for, which is the dude that they traded for?
Vidarian
for the Vikings. Vidarian
Lowe.
Somebody told me, you know, Vidarian Lowe's got a chance. Who you really want is a guy named Oli Udu, sixth-round pick in 2019 that there's a, you know, he's 6'5", 6'5 and a half, 320 pounds, you know, hasn't really got a ton of a chance with the Vikings, but he might be sort of one of those under the radar, you know, small bet, hoping it hits big that the Patriots could be interested in.
Yeah, to get back to Becton, he is just a massive human. And the question is, can he stay in shape? Can he stay healthy? How invested is he? I actually watched him a decent amount at Louisville because one of my really good friends down in Virginia is a Louisville fan. So I saw a lot of Lamar Jackson and Mekhi Becton during those couple of years. And yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about his potential, his athleticism at that size. He'd be an interesting flyer. He'd be an interesting kind of lottery ticket. As far as I did want to ask you, because I don't know how much we've talked about this. I'm trying to remember, but everything blurs together. So obviously, Owenu, you know, the offensive line tag is the offensive line tag. Doesn't matter if you're a guard or a tackle, you get the same number at about $21 million. Greg, when you watch him, because I know there's some disagreement here within the football film world. I was reading Mass Live, and there's a line in the Mass Live story that says Sidy Sow is the presumed starter at right guard. And immediately when I read that, I said, well, that would tell me the Patriots see Mike Owenu as a tackle full time. Where do you stand on Owenu? Do you think he is a full time tackle? You sign him, he's playing 17 games on the right side for you.
I would put it this way. In an ideal world, Mike Owenu is a starting right guard and, you know, all pro caliber. At tackle, I would say he's in the vicinity of Pro Bowl. You know, but where the Patriots are, I don't have a problem with each. From what I understand from Mike Giardi, Owenu prefers to play guard. I mean, Sidy Sow saying that he's the presumed starter right guard, I think is a little ambitious. I mean, look, he did some nice things. I want to see how thick he gets in the offseason. But what about left guard? Who's playing left guard? I mean, Mafi, he's a bit of a project. Cole Strange is coming back from a serious injury. I mean, I more had Sidy Sow penciled in at left guard. But, you know, maybe people have other ideas.
Yeah, and there is some questioning if Cole Strange is going to be ready for the beginning of camp.
Yep.
with the knee injury. And look, this is not the dump on Strange because he actually improved throughout the year last year. He was getting better as the season went on. But yep. This is the issue. One of the issues that Greg has talked about ad nauseum with him, he's a little bit thin in the tuk-tuk. And, you know, he doesn't have a big trunk, as they say. He doesn't have big legs, big thighs, big ass. And when you're not as big and you're taking that, you know, you're taking that beating as an offensive lineman, you could be more prone to injury. And one of the things that we've seen with Cole, unfortunately, is a number of injuries. And they've accumulated very early in his career, which was part of the reason why Greg would look at him and say, you know, look at the trunk. He's not as big as other guys. That could cause some issues aside from getting pushed around a little bit, which is the other problem. All right, we've got more here coming up. I do want to remind the people, Greg Bedard, Patriots Podcast with Nick Cattles is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. You can download the app today. Use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Again, that code is CLNS. Just want to close the loop here on the offensive line because Calvin Anderson, we were just talking about him and his illness. He literally just tweeted less than a half hour ago, I almost lost everything. In 2023, I nearly lost my life and my career. I had to walk with God in order to turn devastation into transformation. Soon I will tell the story of how resilience allowed me to return to the game I love. I promised you I would be back. So that certainly sounds like a human who is looking forward to playing football in 2024. If you were wondering about Calvin Anderson and his aspirations and his availability, it does look like he plans on returning to the Patriots and hopefully he is healthy. All right, so let's move away to wrap things up here from free agency and the franchise tag and transition tag talk because we want to move toward Dynasty. And I know this documentary has been pretty polarizing for a lot of people out there, and there was a lot of conversation about the Aaron Hernandez episode that was the most recent that we saw. I think it was episode 6 on Hernandez. And there was a lot in this, okay? I thought Deion Branch was absolutely fantastic when he was talking about his relationship with Hernandez and some of the things that he saw and that he heard. I know Devin McCourty on Andrew Callahan's podcast, he didn't sound like he was too thrilled that Brandon Lloyd was spotlighted as much as he was in that episode. And Devin's point was, dude didn't really know. I'll paraphrase and give you the gist. he wasn't the guy to throw out there as much as they did. Greg, your thoughts on the Hernandez Dynasty episode?
I will get to that as soon as I tell our friends about Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and what I get, the keto meals. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. There's no prep, no mess meals. Factor meals are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. So what happens is they send this ridiculous box with absurd ice packs and stuff like that. The guy, the stuff is still frozen through. And I got to tell you, the meals, I know people don't like this stuff. I was kind of like, I'm telling you, the meals are delicious. And you just have to pop them in the microwave. I did the oven and the microwave, but really at the end of the day, it all tastes the same. Pop it in the microwave for 2 minutes. And I'm telling you, it's delicious. The sauces that they use on it, I don't know how they do it, but I had the turkey chili and zucchini the other day. Oh, the flavor was off the charts. I mean, you guys got to take advantage of this meal. Just try it once. I'm telling you, it's one of these great things where if you want to eat healthy, you don't have the time, you're busy like us doing different stuff, covering a football team, like having Factor in your freezer or in your refrigerator, just it's a lot of peace of mind. So head to factormeals.com/Bedard50. That's factormeals.com/Bedard50 and use code Bedard50 to get 50% off. That's code Bedard50 at factormeals.com/Bedard50 to get 50% off. Just try it. Trust me, you'll really like it.
All right. So, Greg, Hernandez episode, Dynasty.
Okay. So, a few different thoughts. Number one, I mean, people know that I was right in the middle of all of this Aaron Hernandez stuff throughout. I remember coming and covering, I started covering the Patriots in the middle of him and Gronk's rookie season, that 2010 season. And it didn't take me very long to say, who the hell is Aaron Hernandez and why the hell did he last until the fourth round?
Yeah.
And so that's a whole different story about calling different teams and teams taking him off the boards and what was known and what wasn't known and what was going on with him back home. Just focusing on this episode. My overall impression, is, and this will probably be unpopular, and I'm just talking about the things that they talked about in the episode and about Aaron and about the Patriots and about Belichick. I thought largely it was very accurate. Everything that they depicted from, you know, I wish they delved into Bill's relationship with Urban Meyer a little bit more, the pre-draft evaluation, things like that. It was all pretty accurate. What I will say, I thought to me, there were two things that were unfair and really, really lessened the impact of this episode. And I will say, I watched this episode twice. Once by myself, I watched it with my wife and kids last night too. I wanted to see their impression, and especially my wife, you know, who's really smart and a sports fan, not a Patriots fan, but she's a sports fan. And so I wanted to see what she thought, how different people were depicted. I thought it was unfair the way they categorized his press conference to open up training camp after Hernandez had been arrested and released from the team. I thought that 7-minute opening statement from Belichick was one of his finest moments as Patriots coach. He, while a lot of people, especially a lot of the baby Patriots fans, were like, Bill doesn't need to say anything. He doesn't need to. No, he did. And I'm glad that he hit it on the head. He took accountability. I thought it was great. Yeah. He didn't really answer any questions after that. Fine. That's what you're going to get. The way it's depicted on there is Bill sort of like just giving a press conference and then, you know, tossing aside a couple questions and like running off the podium. That's not what happened.
Yeah.
He did take accountability for it. There largely weren't many questions after that, because he did address almost everything in his opening statement. And I thought the closing statement by Kraft, at least the first part of it, where he talked about when we bought the team, we wanted to make a positive impact on our community, and we didn't in this case. Like, that was some bullcrap that's gone along with other things in this documentary. He would have been fine if he just went into the people that lost loved ones, to the daughter that doesn't have a father. We messed up. I apologize. That would have been fun. Putting the precursor on it about making a difference in the community. I mean, come on. You bought a professional football team. You made all these deals, which you bragged about in the documentary, about how you secured the stadium first so that you could edge out other buyers, and other buyers wouldn't want. Like, this was all a business transaction, and this is a business for you, and it's a moneymaker for you. Like, you know, the community stuff is nice, but, you know, it's window dressing. It's really a business at the end of the day. So just largely overall from 10,000 feet, I thought the documentary was pretty accurate. I will say, when I heard Brandon Lloyd was, and I heard this, I think, from Michael Hurley, Michael Hawley, who's in this a lot.
Yeah.
He had told me that Brandon Lloyd was really good on the Aaron Hernandez episode. And I was like, Brandon Lloyd? They got Brandon Lloyd to talk about Aaron Hernandez? Like, I will say, Brandon looks great in this. He looks very clear-headed. He sounds awesome. Anecdotes were awesome. Okay. He was here for 1 year, and that dude was, at least emotionally, I'm not talking about off the field and homicidal tendencies, that year and during his entire NFL career, that dude was more mentally unstable than Aaron Hernandez was. And in fact, I'll share a story with you I've never told publicly before. I told this to Curran last night. So everybody knows I and other media members encountered Aaron Hernandez at that combine. And I've written about it. I was on the Globe podcast. I've talked about it a bunch. If you want to hear the full story, what I've never told anybody before is that when Aaron and I were at the bar, very early in the night, after he had bought us a round, me and some of the other NFL writers were there, and Ian Rappaport was there. Bert was there. Manish at the time, who was covering the league, was there. There was a bunch of people there. And I remember asking Aaron about some of the Patriots free agents, basically anybody with the Patriots. When I'm at the combine, I'm like, I got a list. Like, what do you think of these guys? And I asked Aaron, I said, oh, do you think Brandon Lloyd will be back next year? And he was like, no way. He was like, that dude's effing crazy. So Aaron Hernandez at that time thought Brandon Lloyd was crazy. And so, like, look, like I said, Brandon looks great. He looks very lucent. That was not the case when he was a player. And yeah, it knocked me over when I heard that Brandon Lloyd was commenting on Aaron Hernandez. That was an interesting choice. I don't even know. Why did they call Brandon Lloyd? He was with the team 1 year, but whatever. So what'd you think of it, Nick? I'm very interested to hear your thoughts on it.
All right. So I agree on the press conference part. I thought that was overlooking what Belichick did on that day. And, you know, there weren't many moments where Belichick stood up there and did what he did in that press conference. And I thought overlooking that was an injustice. I actually thought this episode was ridiculous when it came to the handling of Belichick. And through the first five episodes, I heard people saying, oh, it's been unfair. I disagreed with those people. Like, I thought episode five made Belichick look like the mastermind, the football genius. I thought episode five was a bunch of bouquets at the feet of Belichick. But the Hernandez episode, it rubbed me the wrong way. And this is not hindsight. I said it to Kelly right after it was over. I said, I don't feel right watching that. It just came across to me, and this is all subjective and how you view it, it just came across to me that they put way too much blame on Belichick for the Hernandez situation. And I just, a couple of parts, because I do want to highlight with exact information here. The thing that sent me over the top was at the end. When they made it sound, they kind of implied that if Belichick sent Aaron Hernandez out to Seattle, lives would have been saved, Hernandez could have been saved, and all of that. Hernandez had deep-rooted issues that began at 16 years old. And he is not going to move to a different part of the country and all of a sudden become a different human being. That is 100% speculation, We have absolutely no proof that Aaron Hernandez would have changed his ways. He could have went out to Seattle and killed three more people. We have no idea what would have happened if Belichick traded Hernandez. In this idea, I didn't think, Greg, and I know it's a life thing, but from a football standpoint, let's look at that for a minute. You just signed the guy to a contract extension. He's one of the best tight ends in football. He is super young. He's still 23, 24 years old. And you expect Belichick, because Hernandez went to him and said, my family's in trouble. And Belichick's response was, we'll give you security detail. We'll make sure you're safe. And he pretty much denied it and said, no, ship me to the West Coast. At that point, Belichick might be thinking, this is a leverage play. This guy just wants to be out of here. And on top of that, if I call a team on the West Coast and I offer them my Pro Bowl stud tight end who just signed a contract extension, don't you think that's going to raise some red flags? So that part wasn't even brought up, the football side of it and why Belichick might say no. It was just, oh, Belichick was just selfish, football above everything else. No, you just said that he offered security detail and offered to protect Aaron Hernandez's family. It's not as if Belichick was just like, well, them's the breaks, Aaron. Good luck. Another thing I would say that rubbed me the wrong way was Jonathan Kraft at the end of this. Because boy, oh boy, did he have his I put my cape on moment during this episode. Mm-hmm. Robert Kraft was out of the country. Bill Belichick was out of the country. And all of New England was looking towards the mountaintops to find the savior, the moral compass. And Jonathan Kraft was the moral compass who put his fist down on the table and said, I know Robert's not in the country and Bill's not in the country, but we've got to get rid of Aaron Hernandez moments after he was arrested. And the shaping of that, Greg, from Jonathan bothered me, because the way that Jonathan kind of dismissed what Belichick said on the phone to him when he called, it just made it sound like Belichick couldn't care less that this guy just got arrested, you know, on allegations of murder. It was, well, you know, I know how Bill does business. He would have let it play out. Again, that's more speculation. It's reckless speculation. We're talking about the guy just got arrested. Maybe Belichick said, hey, you know what? How about we wait to see if he's officially charged and let's see what happens. I'll get back to the country and we can put our heads together. So I thought the way it was framed was just really a disservice to Belichick. And it was borderline blaming the guy for Hernandez's issues. And I just thought that went above and beyond. Yes, he is culpable for you know, looking the other way. But let's not forget, Bill Belichick coached Lawrence Taylor. We know the stories about LT. And so It doesn't make it right or wrong. But Belichick came up in the time in the NFL as a coach that a lot of guys were doing a lot of things. And so did Belichick know this guy was homicidal? I'm going to guess and say no. Did he think he was a partier? Did he think he had some shady friends? Did he know that he was going out late? And that he was getting maybe he might got into a scuffle or two, and that he got stopped speeding on the highway by a cop one time. I'm sure he knew those things. But on a human level, I don't think Belichick would have just kept him on this team if he thought it was going to go as far as it went and it was as bad as it was. That's how they made me feel watching that.
And that's fair. And I do agree with you that the framing is rough. You know, I will say my wife, you know, like I asked her, like, you know, point blank, like, how do you think it depicted Bill? And, you know, she made the comparison to, you know, Joe Paterno at Penn State. And, and, you know, and I will say, look, the framing, I agree with you. And I did, you know, some of the music and this, the dramatic music when Holder's talking, I agree with you. The framing was rough. They were obviously going for production value, but I do think that and I'll just say, I don't think that if Bill traded Aaron to say the Seattle Seahawks, we don't know what would have happened. All we can go on is Aaron had been in Florida and shot somebody in the face. Aaron had been in California with his wife and had a domestic violent incident in California, which really set Belichick off to the point where he brought his brother DJ in, and DJ was like, he's not listening to anybody. And we know DJ now has his own problems of his own. I'll just say that, like, I thought for the most part it was factually fine, because I do think the overriding thing was Bill Belichick, and I'm not saying he was going to know he was going to be homicidal. There was a lack of due diligence throughout this, from the pre-draft process to when he was with the Patriots. Even Ernie Adams and Robert Kraft are quoted in there. Robert Kraft, there's video of him talking to Belichick on the field about how Aaron realizes he has to get away from people. So there were things known, and I think things they looked the other way.
Yes.
To me, looking back on this, and especially the contract extension, at least Ernie Adams is saying obviously that was a mistake. The contract extension was the most egregious error in all of this, because we see this with every player that they deal with. Like, for example, the Patriots didn't give J.C. Jackson a bag. They didn't give Aqib Talib a bag because they were afraid of what was going to happen if they got that money and how it was going to change them. This is just my opinion. I think he rushed to do the Hernandez, and Gronk got a similar deal because they saved money over the long term. I think they rushed to do that. There was stuff with Rosenhaus going on at the time. I just think that the only thing that would have prevented Aaron Hernandez, and I thought it was great foreshadowing, you know, what happened, something that happened similar to Chris Carter, and again, these are two different circumstances. He had substance abuse problems. Aaron Hernandez had a lot of issues. But, and they had that incredible footage of Aaron Hernandez asking Chris Carter a question at the rookie symposium.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me, the only thing that would have changed things for Aaron Hernandez is if publicly stuff came out ahead of time and to the point where the Patriots like traded him and then leaked like he's in all sorts of trouble off the field. That might have scared him straight for a time, but just trading him to another team, even to Seattle, where's he going to go in the offseason? He's still going to go places unless he stays in Seattle year round, which he's not going to do in his house. He would have had issues. I just think he needed some sort of incident similar to Chris Carter to change the course correction of his life. And that never happened. And so I don't think things would have changed a whole lot.
All right. So we started with Kyle Duggar. Let's end on Kyle Duggar, because the New England Patriots just released the official statement about the transition tag. And here's what Gerard Mayo said about the team using the tag on Duggar. Quote, "Kyle is a talented player with a strong work ethic who has improved every year and been extremely productive. We value players with high character and chose to use the transition designation to give both sides more time to reach a long-term agreement, which is our goal with Kyle." So, unquote. So Gerard Mayo saying on record, look, we put the tag on him because we want this guy here. And I will say the messaging about Duggar and Awenu, very consistent from both Wolf and Mayo. We'll now see if they back it up with their actions. But they have consistently stood by, we want these guys here for the long term. So we'll see if it gets
by the
neat.
Way, I just want to like knock myself back. Like, wait, the Patriots released a statement with a quote from the coach about a free agency move. Like, and where the hell was I? Like, and then also they were very carefully put in there. The tag is a 1-year tender offer for the average of the top 10 salaries at the position. And they said that they are utilizing the transition tag designation to extend their rights to safety Kyle Duggar. Yeah, this tells you that they really want to keep him. And at some point through this process, they're going to get a value on Duggar and they're going to pay him. My only thing is, I hope they're doing the same thing with Michael Wenu, and then I'll be a happy guy.
We agree. He's Greg. I'm Nick. Don't forget to check out BSJ, $50 for the year. You know the spiel. Boston Sports Journal. We will be back later in the week. Who knows how much news is going to break until then. If something huge happens, Greg and I probably pop on and do a breaking news pod. Until then, be well. It's Greg Bedard, Patriots Podcast with Nick Cavill.